Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth.com/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code justnews to save 10%. Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News. We're so grateful to have you on today. We have a really good show for you. Two extraordinary guests who bring a lot of wisdom, particularly in foreign policy, but also on the domestic policy and issues of our time, the economy. Joining us first, General Keith Kellogg, the former National Security Advisor to both President Trump and Vice President Pence. He is really one of the great strategic thinkers in all of this national security space. He's going to join us first, and then we're going to have a great interview with a good friend of the show, Congressman Austin Scott from the great state of Georgia. He'll be here to give us an update on his warnings about the impending global food shortage. If you remember, you heard that here on this show a few months ago. Those predictions are becoming true. The war in Ukraine, other supply chain shortages, increasing fuel costs, which is increasing the cost of fertilizer. All of that has created a perfect storm. And the early signs of a food shortage are beginning to appear. By next year, they're going to be a lot more severe unless some drastic action takes place. Congressman Scott's going to give us the latest on that, what we can do. Also, we can't have a conversation without talking about what happened in his state. Record voter turnout in Georgia after a Georgia election integrity law was passed. How about that? The voter turnout was much larger. They did make it easier to vote and harder to cheat. And the Democrats' claims of voter suppression blown away by the voter turnout in Georgia. I'm sure we're going to be talking about that with Congressman Scott, along with Russia, Ukraine, China, and also the crisis of supply chain in America, which is more than just Biden policies. It's years of neglect in our manufacturing and Main Street sectors. I'm sure we have a lot to talk about there with the congressman. So without further ado, let's get started with two great interviews. We'll take a quick commercial break here from our great partners, sponsors, and advertisers. When we come back, up first, General Keith Kellogg. Folks, eat stress-free this spring. How? With Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. That's great for a busy person like me. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your Springtown goals. Why do I use Factor Meals? Well, it's real simple. I'm busy, but I want to eat healthy. And if it only takes you 2 minutes, I'm all in on healthy eating. And the best part is that Factor Meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. All you got to do is simply heat and savor the good stuff. Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. I love asparagus. Head to factormeals.com/justnews50 and use the code justnews50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That code, one more time, is justnews50 at factormeals.com/justnews50. What are you going to do? You're going to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. while your subscription is active. That's a great deal. One more time. Head to factormeals.com/justnews50. Use the promo code justnews50 for half off your first order.
Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition and, of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off.
All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. Always excited to have this next guest on. He is one of the most important strategic thinkers in the foreign policy and national security space. Of course, he was a national security advisor both to President Trump and to Vice President Mike Pence. He's currently the co-chairman for the Center for American Security, and he's the author of, I think, one of the most important books written in the last couple of years, War by Other Means. If you haven't gotten that book, folks, check it out. It is an extraordinary book. Joining us right now, General Keith Kellogg. General, great to have you back on the show.
Hey, John, thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
It's a great time to have you on because so much is going on in the world. But I want to start with something. We had your good friend Fred Flights on here, our good friend. You wrote an extraordinary op-ed this past weekend in the Washington Times. America First is America at its best. It really took on the false globalist attack that somehow America First under Trump was an isolationist policy. You hit that one right out of the park. Tell us what motivated you to write that.
Well, the frustration we had was everybody keeps targeting America First as isolationists. We're running away from the world. It's all about me, not helping anybody out. I said, that's garbage. It always has been. You know, I remember when we first started this back in 2016, I got a call from a gentleman by the name of Benji Sarlin, who's a writer for MSNBC.
Sure.
And the first thing out of his mouth, he says, well, America First is goes back to the America First Committee in pre-World War II. I said, no, it doesn't, because he was trying to give me to say it's an isolationist type of phrase. I said, no, it has nothing to do with it. I said, it's actually based on the Constitution of the United States. And I said, in the preamble of the Constitution, it says, we the people. Well, America First is designed to help America first, to make sure that our house is in good order before we subvert our allegiances to other nations out there. You know, it goes back, when I had an interesting discussion with Donald J. Trump, this goes back 5 years now, and we were talking, and I said, I know you don't know this guy, but there's a guy named Paul Kennedy who's a big professor at Yale University, pretty smart guy, wrote a great book called Rise and Fall of the Great Powers, 1500 till today. And he said, great nations have fallen because of one big reason, and it's called strategic overreach, meaning you pay everybody else's bills before you pay your own bills. You send money out before you take care of your own country. You fix their potholes and roads before you fix your own potholes. And he said, nations fall because of that. He said, you have to make sure your own house is in order before you can help others. And then when you do that, it's pretty good. And that's when Trump, when he went to the first UN General Assembly, talked about national sovereignty, how all nations should think like that. about your own interests first. And once you do that, then everything else falls in place. So it's America First is not isolationism at all. It is just taking care of us, and then we can help others out there. But there's getting to be a pattern line out there that's what America First is. And so when Fred and I wrote that article, we were pretty frustrated. We said, you know, how many times do we have to beat people over the head with this? But this is our way of the world, and America First Policy Institute, which I'm part of, is pushing it. That's where Trump pushed it. And that's what he means about America First. The American men and women, the kids of America, deserve our attention before we go somewhere else. Pretty simple.
It really is. And really, if you look through history, correct me if I'm wrong in this, but most presidents, at least since the Truman era, have had a foreign policy that it's important to define the American interest before taking a foreign policy or national security action. It only seems that since the Obama years, obviously got changed into Trump and then came back with Biden, that this idea that the American interest should be subjugated to the international interest that kind of got injected. But for most of our history, Donald Trump's and your philosophy was the prevailing philosophy of America, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I don't think anybody really thought there was anything wrong with that. It doesn't mean you abandon your allies. When you talk about alliances, as an example, it's when the President Trump used to say, pay your fair share. You know, I'll just use NATO as an example because they said, well, Trump was anti-NATO and America First is anti-NATO. I said, no, it's not at all. You know, and people will say, well, Article 5, you know, attack on one's attack on all is very important. I said, sure it is. But you know what? I used to talk to people and say, well, tell me what Article 3 says. You know, and I got that blank stare. And I said, well, you know, Article 3 is the funding article. And what Article 3 says is that all nations will prepare and spend for their individual and collective defense. And it was all agreed at the Wales Declaration in 2014 that everybody would pay 2% of their GDP towards defense, and 20% of that would be modernization. Okay. Well, there was only, when we came into office, when the president came into office in 2016 and 17, when the inauguration day, there was only five countries the 28 countries, now 30 countries, that were paying 2% GDP to defense. I said, well, that's not an alliance. You know, and that's what we were talking about when he used to hammer NATO, is everybody pay up to 2%, and then you should never fear about anything going on because it becomes an overpowering collective security alliance and shouldn't have to worry about anything. So that's where we're all kind of coming from. If you want to be part of an alliance, then everybody is part of the alliance on a fair and equitable share. You know, we pay 3.7% of our GDP, which is a lot more than anybody else is being paid there. But we expect a lot of others to pony up as well. That includes countries like Germany, which they're not there yet. Said, look, you need to pay your 2% GDP. And then for years they said they'd never get there. Well, when the Russians invaded Ukraine, all of a sudden they said, well, we're going to go to 2% GDP. Well, I'm glad you realized that all of a sudden, that they need to be there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I guess we're in a moment now where that imbalance has grown again, because the United States belatedly, but now, is putting a lot of money down on Ukraine, 40 plus billion in new spending there, and the Europeans aren't anywhere near that. Does this become another pre-Trump NATO situation where we're carrying a disproportionate amount of the cost?
Yeah, in fact, we were talking about that. I talked about that on television the other day, too. As I said, look, you know, when you add up the tranche that was before that, we're at about $50 billion spread between, you know, military, diplomatic, humanitarian aid. And the close, when you add up all these other nations out there, the closest country to us is Britain. But if you add them all together, it's only about $8 billion, and we spent $50. I said, you know, it's a done deal. You know, the bill's been signed. We're going to spend this recent tranche of $40 billion. I said, but you know, we should tell everybody, this is the last time we're going to do that until the other NATO allies or the alliances that's in Europe that wants to help Ukraine, they need to pony up more. That's part of the deal. They're very wealthy countries, and we shouldn't be putting this on the back of only the U.S. taxpayers. I mean, this kind of settles the battlefield for what it is right now, but I would turn around and say, if I was recommending anything to Congress, I said, no more tranches of money like that until the alliances put money up like we put money up. And balances it out to help Ukraine. Because to me, John, we're just putting way too much on the back of the American taxpayer.
Yeah, no, the burden is counting every day. I just saw a little study that in the city of Chicago, which is obviously one of the most heavily taxed, when you take all of the tax burden together, federal, it's like $157,000 per person in deficit spending between the federal government and the local government. Just remarkable how much we're leaving for a legacy for our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren to pay our debts. How do you handicap Joe Biden's Russia policy now? Obviously, he was slow and plodding. It was bumpy. He was leading from behind. There's been a little bit more assertiveness and clarity lately. Do you think he's doing better, and how would you have recommended him do it versus how he's doing it now?
Well, I think he's doing a better now than he was. I mean, we started this thing in an abysmal fashion. And what I mean by that is, first of all, remember at the very start, we offered Zelensky a ride out of town. And he said, I don't need to ride, I need ammunition. You have to love a guy like that.
Absolutely.
And so that's right off the top, we kind of said, okay, we think this is going to be a loser for you. So we didn't kind of push that. And then when he started, asking for help, we were very slow in the uptake to do that because we were afraid of, quote, escalation.
Right.
And then we finally realized that we need to give him things. Remember, Biden's the one who turned down to give him the 29 MiGs from Poland. And the reason I think that was important is because those MiGs would have increased the size of his Air Force by one third.
Right.
And there's basically air equity going on. And we didn't give them the heavy range artillery they need to match up with the Russians. We finally started to do that. So we were slow on the uptake. Now we kind of realize, now we need to be where we're at. We're still not quite there. There's still some other systems we should provide him. But it's almost like now we kind of said, now let's go do something else. Here's where I think Biden's making a mistake. And by the way, I don't think he can do it, but here's what hopefully he should have been able to do. This is one of those now, how do you get to conflict termination?
Yep.
Because over time, this thing is going to continue to spin out of control. Zelensky's not quitting. Putin's not quitting. Well, where's the interlocutor, normally it's the President of the United States, that can sit down with these two parties and say, okay, let's have a talk about this. Where are we going with this? Can we cut back on this? Let's go back to the status quo ante, in other words, back where the war started. And I don't think they're going to be there because Biden doesn't have any credibility. So it's sort of like right now, I don't think they know what they're doing. Right now, they're basically saying, well, we've given you the money. We've given you the ammunition. We've given you the weapon systems. Now it's kind of over you. But I don't see him proactively saying, okay, how do we get to the end of this game? Because to me, the longer this goes on, the worse it could get because somebody will make a miscalculation. Or the sacrifices of the Ukrainians are going to be enormous because they're going to keep getting cities hammered. Children are going to die. Men and women are going to die. And Zelensky's not giving in, and neither is Putin. So I think we're kind of at a stalemate right now. But the U.S. has kind of just said, they're kind of watching from a distance and not putting any diplomatic pressure to me on either party to at least say, let's see where we're at. I don't recommend at all Zelensky, quit or give up anything. But the Chinese had a philosophy of fight, fight, talk, talk. That was Mao Zedong's idea when he was working with the Chinese nationalist. And that's what he should do. Keep fighting, but at least you should talk. So that's a long answer to a short question. I kind of give him, when they started with an F, he's probably right now at a C, because we haven't gone to the next step, what he needs to go to.
Yeah, such an important moment in history for us to get this right and not to get us into a prolonged conflict. And it's going to be very interesting to watch how he navigates. Today, Anthony Blinken gave a speech on China, great warning of the spread of communism. And he offered an interesting concept. He had a lot of the rhetoric of what a Donald Trump might say, that, China is our competitor. They are acting with malign intent and that communism is bad for the world. And then he said that the way they would try to deal is not to go directly at China in a Cold War manner, but instead to try to strategically control the environment around China. A little nebulous. Also talked about the importance of getting China into an international governance posture, which sounds a lot like globalism to me. Your take on the Biden-China policy as it stands today?
Yeah, well, where it stands today and where they want to go. Where it stands today is we're operating from a deficit of will, because I think we're really not being as strong as we probably should be with China. And what I mean by this, John, is, and by the way, what Blinken was saying, this almost sounds like he reread George Kennan's X article about, containing the Soviet Union. Maybe he wants to contain China, which probably is not a bad idea, but that's kind of what it sounds. But look, here's where, we're currently at with we're working China, and you have to use Taiwan as the touchstone for that. This is one of those where And there's no defense treaty with Taiwan, you know, that we just don't have a collective security agreement with them. We used to until 1977 when Jimmy Carter abrogated it unilaterally, which caused the Taiwan Relations Act to come about. So when we did away with that, we also, you know, basically did not recognize Taiwan and the UN, and they went away as well, so they're on the UN. But this is when you look at the Chinese and you go, if you're going to keep acting like this, if you don't want to talk about it, my recommendation would be, all right, well, maybe we ought to go back to a two-China policy. The only reason we're there to one-China policy is because when we tried to open up relations with you, we said there was only one China and Taiwan was part of China. But if that's the way you're going to be, we're going to do that. Second thing we're going to do, we're going to come up with a collective security agreement, because everybody keeps talking about, well, we need to defend Taiwan. Well, then let's let Congress and everybody get a treaty, have Congress approve the treaty, and then go from there. But if you're not going to do it, all it is talk. Because I don't think we're going to defend Taiwan without getting some type of defense agreement, a collective security agreement with them. So that's the second step.
Yep.
And then the third thing I do, if you really want to look at if we really want to defend Taiwan against the Chinese, we maybe ought to say, look, you know, maybe it's time that Taiwan gets readmitted to the UN, and we'll sponsor them to do that. In other words, push back on the Chinese, because otherwise they're dictating the terms. And every time we turn around, we're kind of on our back foot. And if we're serious about it, if not, okay, then do something different. But, you know, President Biden the other day said, you know, that we have a commitment to Taiwan, which we really don't want. We really don't have one.
Right.
But if he wants to talk like that, and there's a lot of people in Congress that are talking like that, then let's formalize it. Then let's make it serious. And then let the American people make a decision on that. You know, let the Senate decide on a treaty. But so right now it's kind of like there's a lot of talk. The Chinese are kind of brushing us off, and they continue to march forward. I mean, remember, this is the same President Xi is the same guy who stood in the Rose Garden with Barack Obama and said that he has no intention of fortifying any of the islands in the South China Sea. And within a year, they were fortified.
We saw what that was.
I don't trust these guys at all. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're weaponized that entire region now. I mean, they're just building military outposts everywhere. As you look back at this moment now, you know, there's still some of the Trump policies in place, which tells you that they were probably the right thing. Even Democrats can't reverse them, despite their obsession of reversing Trump. But if you were advising Joe Biden right now, it's an interesting idea. Do we formally recognize Taiwan and literally create that thing? President Trump and I, when we were together the last time, we talked about a PEDO, a building on the Quad's agreement that you and others worked so diligently on in the Trump years, and maybe creating a NATO for the Pacific. Do you think that there is a opportunity for that? Is that a good strategy as a bridge to deciding whether we formally recognize Taiwan?
Yeah, I think you can create an arc around China if you really want to do it. And the real linchpin on that were the Japanese, you know, because we thought that they could. There's no love lost between the Japanese and China anyway. And when we were with Prime Minister Abe, what we wanted them to do was, you know, basically change their constitution and make it so that Article 9, which basically says they don't have a standing army, is change Article 9 so you do have a standing army and a navy instead of a, quote, Japanese defense forces.
Right.
And create the ability to have a good, solid military force. Because the Japanese and the Chinese have this relationship that goes historically not real well. To do that, to stand that up, then we work with the South Koreans as well, and then you work with the Philippines, and then you work all the way down to Vietnam. And Vietnam, we had great relations with, and they don't have great relations with the Chinese. We basically create an arc of security that would extend actually out to the South China Sea, especially with Vietnam. That's one of the reasons why we gave two pretty darn good. They were older, but pretty good. Military vessels, Coast Guard vessels, to the Vietnamese,
right,
so they could patrol the South China Sea. So you can create that arc of security. We were trying to do that. It was slow, but the key player in that were going to be the Japanese. And then Abe got sick, and then we had the election, and that kind of fell through. But that was kind of the intent behind it, because what you don't want to do is you want to create this defensive arc around China. Otherwise, they're going to really impact the trade lines that you see that go through the South China Sea and around Taiwan and that region as well.
Yeah. It's a game of chess, and sometimes the Biden makes it sound like it's a game of checkers, but it's so much more complicated. And I think the direction that you guys were giving on China was actually beginning to have an effect, and now it's muddled again. As you look out, there's a lot of people. It's a story that actually broke first on Just the News about two and a half weeks ago. The Biden administration quietly made recommendations or agreed to changes in our relationship with the World Health Organization that would subject the United States to some of its future pandemic edicts, including things about misinformation and when to travel and not. Your thoughts on, without getting Congress's consent, the idea of changing that relationship and subjugating American sovereignty to an NGO?
Yeah, I'd have huge pushback on that, John. The fact is, that was just dumb. You know, I'd say, look, we're going to start working with you again and full up when you start breaking through what actually happened with the COVID epidemic and where that started from and the Chinese, where it came out of. But right now, trying to give this to the WHO any type of prerogatives over any of our health care is just absolutely crazy. And people saying, well, that's not really what it was. I said, look, you don't want to leave anything in there for interpretation, and you can make it vanilla as you want, but if you put it in words, somebody will interpret it wrongly, and I don't want that to happen. So just, you know, you don't want to put anything in writing and any kind of support for the WHO. You know, and I've had huge concerns with him ever since when COVID broke, and we didn't get the support we wanted from him to try to get our CDC teams into China to try to break down what was actually happening out there. And you know, Tedros is not exactly a friendly guy to work with, you know, and he was very, very much in the Chinese pocket. So
yeah.
I think it was a good pushback on him. We pushed back on him, and it goes back to this whole thing about what you made the term, used the term a minute ago, globalization. Or look, these foreign organizations or these organizations that are UN organizations, you know, they shouldn't control anything of what we do or any financial activities of what we do or any policy activities of what we do here in the United States.
Yeah, such an important thing. And it's remarkable how quietly Biden tried to slip this under the radar. It's good that people caught it and there. I want to go to one other issue that you have been so eloquent on, and that is the growing wokeness in the military,
yeah.
A focus on something other than the mission of fighting war and being secure and being safe. A really remarkable thing happened kind of quietly. Fort Bragg is going to be renamed Fort Liberty. I know Fort Bragg is so important to you. Your reaction to that name change?
Yeah, when I heard that, it really shook my head. You know, John, you know, I served at Fort Bragg a lot of times. You know, I got married at Fort Bragg. Two of my kids were born at Fort Bragg. My daughter deployed with the 82nd from
right.
Fort Bragg into Afghanistan. My son deployed out of Fort Bragg into Afghanistan. My son-in-law deployed out of Fort Bragg into Iraq. Commanded the 82nd there. It's got a reputation around the globe as the premier deployment force from the U.S. Army with its forces that are there. And it makes no sense to me that they did this, because to me, I said, you know, the reason that, first of all, with Fort Bragg, when I used to talk to soldiers, they had no idea who Bragg was named after. They
That's
could
right.
care less. All they want to know is it was a pretty neat name that came out of there when you deployed out of Bragg. My frustration is, look, this was decided, this whole thing about the Confederate officers was actually decided in 1865 with Ulysses S. Grant and President Johnson. And we've revisited it all, and I think we made a huge mistake by tearing apart some of our history. You know, we have warts in our history, so what? All countries do. But we've addressed them all, and we've talked about them. And what they're trying to do is sort of like burning the books. You just take all these names away, and it doesn't – so you, instead of talking about your history, you just kind of throw it away. And I don't care what you've done. You've created this. I don't care how good some of the names are. Like Fort Benavides at Fort Hood, who was, you know, Medal of Honor winner, which is fine. And I know that Fort Hood at Fort in Texas was a Confederate general. But the very fact is, it's one of those, okay, who's going to – so maybe in 10 years we ought to rechange the names again, or how about every 5 years we change the names of the posts? Because there's no standing legacy to these posts. So Fort Liberty, to me, will always be – I'll always call it Fort Bragg. Because to me, it was just, you made it a woke instrument and had
yeah.
nothing to do with the historical change out there. And liberty means, I mean, like, okay, so you didn't name it for anybody. And I just think we've made a huge mistake in the last couple of years by pushing this whole thing on this renaming convention. I had this whole discussion in the Oval with President Trump with Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense, and Mark Milley. And when they made a comment, in fact, it was, you know, pretty public, I've said this before, when Mark Milley and Esper said, well, Lee was a traitor, I stopped him right there. I said, wait a second. I said, look to your left. That's where the residence is. I said, that was decided by Ulysses S. Grant when he went into Andrew Johnson right after Appomattox. And when President Johnson said he wanted to court-martial Lee as a traitor, and said that was decided by when Ulysses S. Grant said to him, well, you do that, you're going to find a new general. And I said, that should have stopped everything right then. And then from creating what we're doing today is an absolute, it's just insane of changing all these posts. But it gets worse than that. We're changing street names. We're changing barracks names. And I finally turned to Mark Milley and I said, you know, Mark, you know, other than the mast of the Maine that sits at Arlington, the biggest memorial at Arlington National Cemetery is the Southern Memorial, dedicated to the Confederacy. And there are Confederate soldiers based, you know, buried around it, and it was dedicated by a U.S. president. So what are you going to do about that? And I said, you know, you don't go back and revisit history. I said, learn from it. And that's why, you know, that's why I stand on the podium and yell a little bit, because I said, this is just, it really is divisive for the nation, and I just don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, no, it's amazing, and it's going to keep marching on as long as the Democrats are in control. It seems to be more important to them than securing the border or doing some of the other things. I want to ask one last question for you. The recent revelation that there was a plot to assassinate former President George W. Bush, and that the key part to it was the perpetrator, an Iraqi national here, felt comfortable he could get his assassins back and across the border easily, exploiting the Biden border. In fact, he himself got here and was allowed to stay in by taking advantage of the Biden changes in asylum. Is this the beginning of a series of warning signs that an open border is going to have a direct effect on our national security?
Oh, sure. I didn't know we had a southern border.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it appears to be missing right now.
I mean, it's insanity. You know, we really, John, I will tell you, President Trump really worked really hard at getting the border right. I mean, meeting after meeting after meeting out there, because he believes if you don't have a border, you really don't have a country. And it's really frustrating to me to see that being opened up the way it is. And you're right. I mean, the people think that the border patrols down there is trying to cover the border. But when they are pulled back to cover the agencies and the things they have to do when people are coming across the border to control them and process them, that means the border is not being patrolled at all. And those are great Americans, the men and women who are in the Border Patrol. And we're not giving the advantage of the ability to control the border, and it's basically wide open. And Trump saw that, and he had enormous frustration, and that's why we worked so hard to close it down. And that doesn't mean your borders are closed. There's a right way to enter the country and a wrong way. I said, look, my daughter-in-law just became a naturalized citizen. She's from South Africa, but she did it the right way. You know, she went through her visa, went through all the Americanization, naturalization, and came in the country and finally got, you know, sworn in. But she did it right. And everybody needs to come in right. There's a line, get behind the fall in line and get that way. And that's, you get enormously frustrated when you see that, because, again, it falls on the back of the American taxpayer, because these people are coming in. Somebody's going to be paying for a lot of the services, and it's going to be the Americans that are out there. And there's a way to do it, and let's do it properly, not in a random way. I remember, you know, there was a great black congresswoman, Barbara Jordan from Texas, years ago, we put in charge of it. And she had a wonderful, I mean, she spoke like gold. She was tremendous.
Very eloquent.
She was Democratic.
Yeah.
And she's
I'm not sure she'd be a Democrat today. Wouldn't it be interesting to see?
No, I don't think, you know something? John, she'd probably be a conservative Republican, but she talked about the border and the importance of the border and controlling the border. And she was put in charge of that commission that studied that. And I look back at her words about it, making sure you have a good, secure border, and there's a process to come in there. And she was a magnificent congresswoman.
She sure
was. And a Democrat at that. But I'll tell you, it's wide open right now.
Yeah, she died so young. I got to interview her once before her death in the early Clinton years, and she had a wisdom and a pro-America look at our country that just was really remarkable woman. So,
yeah.
Yeah, well, you're right about her. She did take a look at that border, and we should be, this administration should be adhering to her recommendations, not what they got right now. It's a crazy time. Yeah. General, it is always an honor to have you. Folks, I want to remind you one more time, because if you haven't gotten this book, it's a wonderful Father's Day gift. I actually have a couple copies that I'm going to be giving to my brother and my dad for the holidays. The author of the great book, War by Other Means. Get it, sell it, give it to people for a gift. It's an amazing story of what really went on in the Trump administration. It cuts through all of the bad false stories, and it really lays out how the foreign policy of Donald Trump came to be and why it was so effective. And as you know, we're seeing it unravel now. So remembering what it was like and knowing we can get back there someday is a great roadmap. General, as always, a wonderful conversation. So I want to thank you again. Wish you a happy early Memorial Day.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Great honor. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after this. Hey, folks, if you're a homeowner and you're like me, you want to protect your home, right? But when's the last time you checked on the title to your home? If you never have, listen to this. A new report on homeowners shows we all now have $16 trillion in equity. That's an all-time high in America. That's why you need protection from a scam the FBI calls house stealing. That's when the equity in all of our homes is the target, sadly, of scammers. If nobody's watching the title to your home, these scammers can transfer your title to their name, take out loans, and your equity could be gone. Poof, gone. You have to protect your equity from this despicable crime right now with triple lock protection from my good friends at HomeTitleLock.com. The first step is to check on your home's title to see if it's still in your name. Sign up with your address at HomeTitleLock.com and be sure to use the promo code JUSTNEWS. They're going to send you a complete title scan of your home's title and your first 30 days of triple lock home title protection. That's legendary protection, by the way. It's free. HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code JUSTNEWS. One more time, go to HomeTitleLock.com today and protect your most important asset, the equity in your home. Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a four-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right. You heard me right. 4 years for 30 bucks. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. Always glad to have this next guest on. He has lots of wisdom, and I can tell you, on this show not that long ago, he was one of the first to raise the concern that we were headed towards food shortages. Now everybody's hearing about them. Joining us right now, he was right then, he's going to be right again today, Congressman Austin Scott from the great state of Georgia. Congressman, great to have you on.
Hey, John, great to have you, and thank you, John.
Let me jump in and ask you about what happened at home, because you had a remarkable election on Tuesday night. It went mostly without hitches, and it had the largest turnout that Georgia had ever seen in a primary. This, less than a year after Major League Baseball pulled the All-Star game out of your great state, and Democrats promised that there was going to be racial suppression of vote, and this would turn down voting. All of those predictions turned out to be false. Georgia pulled it off perfectly. Your reaction?
Hey, it was all a bunch of nonsense when they started making the accusations. We had literally 1.9 plus million voters in this last primary. Very few complaints about time at the polls, very few complaints about the election process as a whole. I think that anybody who participated got to see that it was just a bunch of smoke and mirrors from the Democratic Party as they complained about the changes to the election law. And, you know, again, the law made it easy to vote and hard to cheat. And so our governor did a good job with it. He had a big win. I did think Brian Kemp was going to win, but David Perdue was a good senator. He had Donald Trump's endorsement. Brian Kemp got 73, almost 74% of the vote.
Yeah.
And so I was for Brian. I thought he would win. I am shocked at the margin that he won by, though.
Well, it's a real vote of confidence by the people of Georgia. And I think that now the great challenge is, and, you know, President Trump had two losses in election night. He was obviously for Senator Perdue, and he was pushing Congressman Jody Heiss for Secretary of State. The incumbent Brad Raffensperger won there. But then he won two other big ones. Herschel Walker, Marjorie Taylor Greene, folks like that won. Overall, it's still
Burr
a very...
Jones.
Yeah, right. Yep. Vernon Jones.
Burr Jones, Lieutenant Governor, won without a runoff.
Yep.
And look, he's still an important part of our party.
Yeah. What is the key? Because this was a hard-fought primary, but now everybody needs to unite to defeat people like Stacey Abrams, who actually say she's ashamed of her state team. And this comment she made going into this election were jaw-dropping. How does Governor Kemp, with that much popularity, President Trump with his popularity, how do they come together to make sure that Georgia is a red state at the end of the election night of 2022?
Well, I mean, Georgia is a red state. And the momentum is on our side. If you look, Stacey Abrams got 720,000 votes. There were 1.2 million cast on the Republican side. That has kind of reversed over the last couple of years, where maybe the momentum, or if you will, was on their side in the primaries. But there are a lot of Americans that have woken up to what is going on in this country, John, and there are a lot of people that have been voting Democrat in the state of Georgia that can no longer identify with the Democratic Party that they see today, and they're coming over and they're voting Republican. And, you know, they believe in personal freedom, individual liberties, and economic opportunities, and they recognize that the Democratic Party that Stacey Abrams and Joe Biden stand for is not working for them. So she said, Georgia's not a great state to live in. I think it is a great state to live in, and I think Brian Kemp thinks it's a great state to live in. And I would tell you, I think America is the greatest country in the world to live in. And if you listen to the Democratic Party, they pretty much say they don't like America. And that's where I think that the national Democratic message has left so many of their people behind. And hopefully, at the end of November, Republicans will have a controlling interest in the House and the Senate, and then we can bring this thing back to some sense of normalcy, get the price of fuel down, get the price of groceries down. We'll have to drag Joe Biden and them kicking and screaming, but that's okay. You give us a chance, and we're going to deliver.
That's why God made elections, so we can change course when things are going as badly as they are now.
That's right.
As you look out now, I want to get back to this issue of the food supply, because you were one of the first persons I talked to, and everything that you predicted is coming true. Russia made an interesting blink maybe an hour or two ago, saying, hey, if you lift some of the sanctions, we'll help out with the food shortages. Obviously, that's just a form of blackmail, bribery. But there is going to be a global food shortage. It's going to be a lot worse in third world countries than America. But we have to come to grips with this. And this should be a learning moment for us to figure out how we become less dependent on countries that maybe don't have our best interests at heart. Do you think that moment is coming?
I think it was here a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that when President Trump started talking about America first, people knew that he didn't mean only America. I mean, the message of America first is that the foundations of your basic necessities need to be grounded in your home country. Or if that's not an option, then they need to be grounded in countries that share both your interests and your values. And what's happened in America is so many of our big industries have shifted their operations to communist China and other countries that we can't depend on, that we don't control our destiny anymore in this country. And Americans don't like that. It doesn't matter what party they're in. And they know that we have to make sure that we can feed ourselves. We should have more of our pharmaceutical supply manufactured right here inside the United States. They are waking up to the shortages of precious minerals and our inability to produce them in the United States. And so, John, I think Americans want common sense solutions. I don't think they want to be dependent on other countries. And I think Americans understand that China puts China first, India puts India first, and there's nothing wrong with us putting America first. And again, America first doesn't mean only America.
Right. Yeah, there's this false argument. In fact, we just had General Kellogg on the show, and he wrote a really powerful op-ed in the Washington Times a couple of days ago. America first doesn't mean isolationist. It just means you define the American interest first before you make decisions. Many times, the American interest is to help others, and we've shown that throughout our entire 246-plus year history. When do you think that the American people are beginning to realize that the attacks on America first are kind of false attacks, false arguments, not non sequitur arguments?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're tired of it, and I think they want solutions. They know that what's going on at the border is not okay. They know that we're losing, you know, tens of thousands of Americans a year to drug overdoses that come from ignoring the laws to secure the border. They know that countries like China are not only building islands in the South China Sea and other areas, but they are a territorial threat to Taiwan. They recognize now that, unfortunately, we have become dependent on even a country like Taiwan, who shares both our interests and our values. Too much of our chip manufacturing is done over there. We need some of that brought back to the United States. And there's a recognition that while the press doesn't like to talk about the human rights violations of China,
yep,
I think that more and more Americans are paying attention to that. And when you buy something and you turn it over, as I did today at Lowe's with my kid when he wanted a little pinwheel, and it says made in China, maybe it should say made in communist China,
yep,
instead of just China. Because China is not a country that is moving in the right direction. They're a country that is moving in the wrong direction with regard to human rights. And we need to shift our purchasing from China to other countries that are out there in Asia that do share our interests and our values.
Yeah, it's so important to do that. That'd be an interesting idea, moving the made in China to made in communist China label. That would educate a lot, yep, of people, because I think a lot of young people don't even realize it's communist. They've been told to love China. And
yep,
fascinating.
And there's some things they're going to make that that we're not going to make in America, you know, some of the cheaper stuff that that we buy. But, you know, the high tech manufacturing, the pharmaceutical manufacturing, pharmaceuticals are pretty much India. We need to bring as much of that back to America as we can.
Yeah, no, that's the great opportunity of the next few years, is to figure out how much we can insource, create jobs, create independence. Starts with energy, because we've given up a lot of our energy, but
that's right,
an enormous opportunity. You had just a wonderful interview the other day on Mayor Bartiromo, and I think your vision for the American economy is right where I think most Americans are now. They're tired of $5 gas. They're tired of food shortages, rising prices. If Republicans get in control, and it certainly looks like they can next year, where do they start to build an economy that is the antithesis of the Biden economy?
Yeah. Well, what we have to do is adopt legislation that is supportive of our small and mid-sized businesses. The Democratic Party, they're going to support those Fortune 100s. Those are the companies that can afford to move their operations offshore. What we as the Republicans have got to do is we've got to make sure that we're taking care of those small and those mid-sized businesses that can provide and will provide competition for the supersized industries that are moving more and more of their employees outside of the United States. And so I think the key to it is protecting people's constitutional rights, and then in conjunction with that, making sure that your small and mid-sized businesses are able to thrive. And that comes from a couple of things, John. You know, the Democratic Party wants everybody in America to be able to unionize. That simply won't work. I mean, you can't put unions in to, you know, your small town hardware store, your small town grocery store,
right,
and think that those small and mid-sized businesses are going to be able to survive. It's just not possible. And so protecting small and mid-sized businesses from what they want to do By turning control of those businesses over to labor unions, that's one of the things that we have to do as Republicans. making sure that we protect those small and mid-sized businesses from tax increases that the Democratic Party wants to pass on to them. And then we've got to have, you know, on the social benefit side of things, John, we've got enough money to take care of anybody who can't work in this country. So if you can't work, we're a generous enough country that there can and will be some type of support for you out there. But we'll never have enough money to take care of people who simply won't work.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have to stop competing with those mid-sized and small-sized businesses by handing out so much in the way of benefits from the federal government. And I think if we can do those three things, I think the economy will recover. And then we have got to get a Republican president and get some of this stuff locked down permanently into permanent law instead of just temporary fixes.
Yeah, that's such an important thing. And so many of the things that Washington's done the last 10 years, just keep kicking the can down the road, getting things locked in, like the tax cuts and other key policies, getting manufacturing. That gives people certainty, right? Businesses then on Main Street can say, all right, we know we can count on these breaks. We can know we can count on this regulatory relief. Let's invest. And we saw that in the Trump years. And then it seems like everybody is pulling back in the economy right now because so much seems uncertain about the Biden agenda and where it's going. Do the elections give an opportunity for business to see a clearer path to a more bright future? Is that what you will the business community react if Republicans get in control?
I think so. Now there is still concern, and I hear this quite frequently from business owners that have the ability to expand inside America. They're concerned about Democrats having control of the agencies and taking certain liberties with the agencies as far as investigations and fines and other things that you would not see in, you know, under a Republican administration. And so I spoke with a guy here in Georgia that's got the ability to expand. They're in geothermals. They use resin. It's a big manufacturing process. And their concern and the reason they won't expand is because it's hard to invest tens of millions of dollars in an environment where you don't know what the regulations are going to be tomorrow.
Yeah, great point.
And so I think that is a key part of it for industry, is not knowing what the regulations inside the United States are going to be a year from now or 24 months from now. And if we can handle some of that, John, if we get the House and the Senate, we can write things into the appropriation measures.
The power of the purse string.
That limit the agency's ability to take punitive actions against the employers in this country. And that's one of the primary concerns with our business owners that do have the ability to expand. One, they're looking at the economy, potential recession coming, but they're also looking at an extremely aggressive regulatory environment, and the combination of those two things has got them keeping their hands in their pocket instead of putting their money at risk.
Yeah, such an important dynamic that has to be changed. Last question I want to throw at you, because you have been one of the most important voices on border security. We hear the Homeland Security chief constantly say, Mayorkas, we got the border under control, it's safe. We just saw the FBI director yesterday say the opposite. The border is a problem. The CPB has its hands full. National security threats do exist because of the condition there. And then we also had the Justice Department essentially say the same thing, because in their indictment of this Iraqi national that was going to attempt to assassinate President Bush, they acknowledged his whole scheme rested on the idea that he could get the killers across the border and back with ease. And in fact, he himself got in here because of a change that Biden's asylum rules made that allowed him to stay in the country when he normally would have been kicked out. Does the Bush assassination court case really start to wake people up that there's a real serious consequence here to this border?
Well, I think Americans are awake, and Americans know there's a problem. I think people from the immigrant community know there's a problem. And the problem is the Biden administration is being controlled by a group of radicals. And so I don't think the Biden administration is going to do anything about it. And it's just the position he's taken. And it is one of indifference towards the way America feels or the sovereignty of our country. I am hopeful that if we, again, get the privilege to govern in November, that we'll be able to write into the appropriation measures restrictions on what can and can't be done with the funds. And one of the potential restrictions would be, hey, you know what? You can't spend any money on some agenda that they might have until you are able to prove that the border is secure and eliminate the flow of illegal immigrants. So there are things that we can and should do and will do, John, but you got to have someone in the White House that cares. And right now we just don't.
It's a remarkable dynamic. And I was at the store the other day, and this woman came up to me, must have recognized me from the work I do, and just said, just flat out, are we losing this country right now? And I said, I hope not. But, you know, it does require two parties to dance on this one. And one party is marching against the Americans' will. It seems as though this election has much higher stakes than maybe some earlier elections in our past. Do you feel good about Republican chances?
I feel very good about Republican chances. I think that the Democrats are going to pull out all strings. I think they're going to do their best to create crisis after crisis. And but between now and then, and they're pretty good at the blame game. I'll just tell you, I think every time an American goes and they fill up with gas, or they go to the grocery store or go through a drive-thru, John, I think they know that they're better off under Republicans, especially if you look back to where the country was 4 years ago. Virtually full employment, gas was a couple of dollars a gallon, food was cheap, and now people might have gotten a wage increase, but they're having a much harder time making it to the end of the month than they were just a few years ago. And that's because of what Joe Biden and the liberals have done with the cost of fuel and energy. And that just translates into these huge inflation numbers that we're seeing. And, you know, so I'm confident in the American voters that come November, they're going to create some balance. And then we as a party, we've got to deliver that balance in the legislation that we pass.
That's the key. Got to deliver next year. That's what people will be looking for.
That's right.
Congressman,
that's right.
It is always an honor to have you on. You bring us such wisdom, and your ability to synthesize complex issues is such a great benefit to our audience. I want to thank you again. Wish you a happy early Memorial Day.
Thank you, John. You have a great weekend as well.
Thank you, sir. All right. We'll talk to you real soon.
All right, man.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up. You know what, folks? Stress may be why you can't lose weight. If you've got moderate to high stress like I do, a doctor-formulated weight loss supplement called Lean could be your solution. Chronic stress wreaks havoc on blood sugar, which can cause your body to store excess fat. Stress can also slow your metabolism, which fuels weight gain. And you know all about stress eating and sugar cravings, right? Now the good news. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels, help optimize metabolism, and keep your appetite under control. Now, if your life is a bit stressful like mine and you want to lose weight, add Lean to your healthy diet and exercise lifestyle. Now get 15% off and free shipping at takelean.com. That's takelean.com and enter the promo code JustNews15. That's the promo code JustNews15 at takelean.com. One more time, takelean.com. Statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, and it's not a substitute or alternative for care from a healthcare provider. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com usa.com/justnews. Welcome back from the commercial break. That wraps up another show. What a great show today. Big thanks to Congressman Scott, to General Kellogg. Two great voices. They really bring a lot of substance. You know, so many interviews on TV in the cable space today are just talking points and fluff. But here we get, in this show, an opportunity to talk to people who are in the know, who talk honestly about the facts, what their goal is, what can be done. I'm always honored by the quality of the guests who are willing to come on and spend time with us. I know their lives are busy, but they always make a difference. And this conversation that we get to have every day, I feel so blessed to have, because we have smart people trying to give us facts and information so you can make up your own mind. That's all we're trying to do here. Give you the information, trust you to make up the best decision for your life and politics, your family, economics. And General Kellogg and Congressman Scott, for sure, added to that process today. We're so grateful for them. Now, before we go, I always like to say, it's important, really, to appreciate that one of the benefits of being in the Just the News family is we have all of these incredible partners. They have great services, great products, and because they support Just the News, they create very special offerings for those who listen to John Solomon Reports podcast, who read Just the News, and one of those are my good friends at iTarget Pro. All of us are thinking about, in this era of rising crime, heck, even rising animals. There was a story the other day on our site about a black bear that broke into somebody's house. And if it weren't for the fact that they had a gun in the house, they might have been killed by this animal. Well, being a safe, trained gun owner so that you can defend yourself and your family is important. And thankfully, our good friends at iTarget Pro have created an unbelievable solution, a revolutionary system that allows you to dry fire practice with your actual firearm anytime. You can do it in the safety and privacy of your own home. This is a great product. I use it with my 9mm regularly. It's a fantastic system. It has a proprietary app. You can use it on your smartphone. You load the laser bullet into your firearm and you start training every day. It works flawlessly, and it helps you to develop muscle memory, sharpen your target reaction, your speed, your sight alignment, trigger function, all the things that make you a good safe shooter, and God forbid you need to do it to defend yourself, a good defender of you and your family. Now, iTarget Pro has a special offer for all of us here at the Just the News family. So go to itargetpro.com right now and save 10%. Plus, you're going to get free shipping with the offer code JustNews. That's all one word. This makes a great gift for Father's Day, and it is less expensive than a few hours at the range. So for your father, your grandfather, someone special in your life on Father's Day, what a great gift. It can help them sharpen their defense skills with their own weapon in their home with this extraordinary system. I do it all the time. I love it. It saves ammunition. It saves range costs. And of course, it makes you a better, safer shooter. Why not have that in your back pocket? So, itargetpro.com. That's easy. The letter itargetpro.com. And just use the promo code JustNews. With that promo code, you're getting 10% off and free shipping. Go get this incredible product. If you are a gun owner and you want to be better and safer and smarter and build that muscle memory without having to expend a lot of ammunition, iTarget Pro has the perfect solution. iTargetPro.com. Use the special code JustNews. All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports. So grateful for all that you do for us, subscribing to our newsletters, joining our subscription VIP club, and having the monthly meetings with me where we have great conversations. I just love it, and I'm so grateful for you and all of the members of our community, including our great advertisers and sponsors like iTarget Pro. All right, that wraps it up. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of John Solomon Reports. Until then, God bless you. God bless this great country of America, as he always has. Have a good night. And remember, if you need a news fix, 24/7, we got you covered at justthenews.com.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.